Welcome back everyone to the channel. How many of you reside in a small town, or maybe lived there for a period of time in your lives? How many of you believe in alternate realities, other dimensions? What if I was to tell you there was some government type of drug out there that could actually open portals to these different dimensions? Would you believe me? I wouldn't. Stick around, you're not going to want to miss this. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. Now let's get spooky. I have a great deal of experience with hallucinogenic drugs, from the thousands of hits of LSD that I've taken to the pounds of psilocybin mushrooms that I've eaten. I stopped time with the combination of nitrous oxide, ketamine, and LSD. Had mystical experiences where I've heard angels and talked to God on combinations of LSD and mushrooms. Smoked salvia divinorum hundreds of times. And even taken the bizarre mushroom Animedia muscaria, which got me caught in a seemingly eternal time loop that I feel I barely escaped from. But nothing compares to the new hallucinogenic drug sweeping through our town, which people simply called Vortex. The reason for its nickname will become apparent. My first experience seeing someone on Vortex was when I was coming home from work and saw a naked homeless man in the middle of the street. I work the night shift in a rural area and often don't leave until 3 or 4 a.m. So needless to say, this caught me by surprise. There is almost never anyone out on these streets at night. I almost hit him with my car. Also, it was the middle of winter and freezing out. A combination of sleet and snow rained down from the sky, covering the naked man in a layer of icy condensation. But despite all this, he didn't seem cold at all. In fact, he was visibly sweating and sending off clouds of steam. His jaw moved rhythmically as if he was chewing on an imaginary wad of gum. As I got out, I saw his eyes staring through me. His pupils dilated so much they covered the entire iris in blackness. At first, I said nothing, just staring back at him blankly. Only the sound of sleet and ice hitting my car and the road broke the silence.
"Sir, are you okay?"
I asked. He ignored my question, instead pointing directly behind me.
"Do you see them?"
he asked in a low, quavering voice. I hesitated to turn around and leave myself open to a potential attack from this potentially psychotic individual, but his clear anxiety and fear rapidly changed my mind. On the side of the road, directly behind me, stood what appeared to be a doorway connected to nothing. Iridescent colors formed a kaleidoscope tunnel that zoomed endlessly into the center. Fractals connecting and dissipating every moment as I stared into this spiraling vortex. I could almost see through it, as if the doorway had the substantiality of a rainbow, but the beings stepped out from the other side of it looked entirely real and solid. They had long antlers branching out from the top of their head, skull-like faces shaped like a deer's, with pieces of rotten skin and fur still attached haphazardly to their bones. Their ribs glistened under the snow and sleet, their claw-like talons extended far below their knees. Their skin, what remained of it, clung to their bones, reminded me of a survivor from a World War II death camp. The smell of rancid meat and rotting flesh rose from their bodies in clouds as they trampled towards us, towering at least 10 feet tall. I don't know what kind of nightmare these monsters had been ripped out of, but now they were fully in our world. They seemed to smile, the bones on their faces twisted and rancid flesh ripped as they grinned down at me. I knew at the moment that I was dead. Even though I stood only 5 feet from the car, they were nearly as close and had much longer strides, as well as freakishly long arms that could reach out and pluck me in an instant. At that moment, the naked man screamed out,
"The Manaha!"
in a panicked voice, and tried to run past the three of them. They all turned to look at him in the same instant, their unnaturally long arms reaching out and picking him up off the ground as if he weighed as much as a feather. They started laughing a high-pitched psychotic laughter that echoed and reverberated throughout the surrounding woods. A sound so loud and all-consuming that I felt it vibrating through my heart and my ribcage. But my instinct kicked in, and I knew I only had a slim opportunity to escape. I took it, running into my still-open driver's side door and slamming it shut behind me as fast as I could. My car was still running, sending out clouds of exhaust behind me. I slammed the gear selector into drive. As I sent one last glance out in the direction of the homeless man, I saw them rendering him limb from limb while he shrieked in agony. One of them pulled his arm off, separating it from the shoulder, and lifting the severed arm over its mouth, letting the blood from the veins and arteries pour into its skeletal mouth. The man was still alive as they ripped off his skin and sent their long, forked tongues into his open eyes and screaming mouth. That was all I needed to see. I pounded my foot onto the accelerator and took off, the engine of the Ford Taurus revving loudly as the four-wheel drive cut through the slush and half-melted snow on the road. I heard a sharp scraping sound on the back of the car, likely one of the creature's claws, but I didn't look back to check. One of them had bounded over and tried to open the driver's side door, running with the car as it accelerated. But luckily for me, my car automatically locked the doors once you began driving. The monster let go and smashed into the back window with its massive bony fist, but then I lost them in a matter of seconds as I sped away.
"What the F, what the F, what the F?"
I said to myself, a vulgar mantra that nonetheless made me feel more grounded. My mind cleared as the adrenaline rush began to wane, leaving me feel used up and exhausted. I went around a sharp turn and, to my great relief, couldn't even see the creatures in the rearview mirror any longer. Taking a deep breath, I centered myself, reaching into my pocket for my phone and dialing 911. 911, what's your current location, please? A young female operator said on the other end of the line. Between breaths, I told her. Clearview Lane, at the town line of Unity and Fredericksburg. I said quickly, my voice trembling. There is a man dead on the side of the road. I think he was attacked by... What did I say exactly? Certainly not the truth. No one would believe me unless they saw it for themselves. Grizzly bears, I finished quietly. My service began to cut out then, and I could only make out every other word she said. Help. Way. I heard her say before the call dropped completely. The service was always spotty out here on these rural mountain roads. I drove down a steep mountain pass towards the main valley where downtown lay. On the way, a scenic overlook had picnic tables. All the trees that obstructed the view were cut down. Looking over, I had the sudden view of the downtown area of Fredericksburg, and I saw fires rising up from the buildings in a towering inferno. I could smell the smoke through my car vents even up here, a smell like charred wood, burning metal and thick smoke. The trees then blocked the view of the town again, but within a couple of minutes, I was driving into the center of it. This was, after all, the only road that led to the house I rented on the far edge of Fredericksburg. Flashing lights from emergency vehicles reflected blindly pulses of red and blue throughout the dark mountainous forests. Something landed heavily on top of my car, and a massive clawed hand reached down and smashed my windshield. I started swerving wildly, barely missing a tree on the edge of the road. A dirt driveway was approaching on the left, and I turned sharply, sending the beast on top of my car flying off. It looked like some kind of hybrid between a gargoyle and a Komodo dragon. It had green skin that glowed in the dark, illuminating the nearby trees in deep viridescent hues. Its winged absolutely dwarfed the center mass of the beam, spreading out in each direction 20 feet. It flapped them languidly, landing soft on the dirt driveway and staring at me with a look of abject fury. It opened its huge mouth and sent out a shriek that sounded like a woman being burnt at the stake, loud, piercing, and seemingly never-ending. My car's headlights were facing it head-on now, and I slammed the accelerator down. The beast jumped up, but was not fast enough. My tires pinned its left wing down as it fiercely beat them, trying to rise in the air. Unable to escape, it fell beneath the tires of my car. A sickening crack resonated throughout the valley as I drove over its spine and chest. I heard rending sounds as its claws and mouth tore at the underside of my cartridge and the tires. The car quickly stopped working as I drove it forward another few feet, the tires rapidly losing all pressure as steam began to pour out of the engine. My heart was beating fast and I felt on the verge of a breakdown. More shrieks from across the valley answered the dying cry of the beast as it let out one final defeated scream, then fell silent. I turned the car off, and all I could hear was the ticking of the engine block and the soft patter of the sleet against the top of the car. Then I heard something else, something that made my heart soar with hope, the sound of a human voice.
"Hey, you in the Taurus,"
someone said nearby. I looked down the dirt driveway and saw one person waving their arms fiercely in front of the one-story blue and white house. I opened the car door, looking down at the flying lizard suspiciously. I have heard many stories of rabid animals who people thought were dead, before they pick them up and the animal came back to life and bit them, or some species of animals that would even play dead as a defense mechanism against predators. I carefully tapped the edge of the wing with my steel-toe boots, then stomped it as hard as I could. The creature did not stir, which I took as a signal that it was truly dead. I jumped out of the car and began to jog towards the house. I didn't want to stay out in the open for longer than I had to. As I neared the front porch, I realized the person who had called me was actually an old man, who looked like he had to be in his 80s or 90s. Tiny wisps of hair grew out of his hawk-like nose and large ears, and his face was a labyrinth of wrinkles and creases. He smiled at me, revealing two full sets of steel dentures that shone under the dim porch lights. I towered over him, and he was hunched over, which further diminished his height. On his head, he wore a fishing cap made of khaki. It looked large on him and jostled slightly as he moved. A large black pin and white font stuck out in the front of the fishing cap read, "Hope in reality is the worst of all evils because it prolongs the torments of man."
"Don't dilly-dally," he said gruffly, looking me up and down. "You know as well as I do what lurks out here. Get inside, get inside."
He made hand gestures like he was swatting at me, and I went through the door into the house. He slammed it shut behind us, engaging a deadbolt and locking the doorknob. The house smelt of vanilla candles, fresh-baked bread, and, behind that, a musty and dusty odor that older homes seemed to get. It had knick-knacks on every shelf in the hall to the foyer. The man pushed by me, leading me to the living room lined with bookshelves. Thousands of leather-clawed hardcover books lined the walls on every side. I noticed he had no TV in here. He motioned for me to sit down on the couch and sat next to me on the recliner. He then started talking.
"My name is Canton," he said slowly, making eye contact with me the whole time. "And yours?"
"I'm Ryan," I said. "Ryan Kellerman." He nodded gravely at this, which almost made me burst out laughing, as it seemed so incongruous to the peddly detail we had just revealed. But I contained my mirth inside myself. Perhaps the shock of the day was just finally getting to me.
"Look, Ryan," he said. "We have a situation."
His steel teeth shone even brighter in the fluorescent lights as he talked. "Yes," I said. "I saw a man get murdered by something earlier, and there seems to be more of those somethings all over the place."
"It's the drug,"
Canton said abruptly.
this vortex crap. I don't know who discovered it, but someone thought it would be fun to use on our town as guinea pigs to mix it up with the illegal drug supply here. This may surprise you, but I am ex-FBI. I also spent decades working with Black Ops and the US government. The governor has called in an agency that people don't even realize exists. They usually call themselves the Psychic Research Agency, or the PRA. While the name might not sound intimidating, they are ruthless killers, torturers, and psychopaths of the highest degree. Through my lifelong connections, I was warned that the federal government had surrounded this town, quarantining us from the rest of the country, and they will soon be sending in these goons to execute every single last one of us, and all the creatures as well. No one could be left alive who saw the powers of Vortex or what it can bring to our world.
So, we're all dead, huh? I asked, feeling dissociated and oddly calm under the circumstances. Outside the house, I could hear sirens, people screaming in the distance, and other sounds that were not human.
Not exactly, he said,
a small smirk crossing his old weathered face.
I put millions of doses of Vortex in the water supply for the town.
I gasped, rising from my chair.
You're the reason everything is going to hell outside?
I screamed. He motioned for me to sit down, calmly waiting for me to stop yelling. It just made me angrier.
No, the drug was already here in isolated cases, and the government had already made the call to kill us when I acted. I found the source and did what I had to do. You have to understand, the agents were already on their way, and the death warrants for every man, woman, and child in town were signed by the president himself. But if everyone is exposed to the drug, then it will open countless portals to other parts of the multiverse, let in many other beings who can fight those federal agents. Those beings are our only chance. They can kill the executioners that have already surrounded the town and allow at least some of us to escape.
I sighed, sitting back down. Even if I believe what you said, I began, and I'm not sure I do, how do you propose that we get out of town? We can't exactly just walk through the woods with countless monsters infesting the entire area. His face fell, his expression turning to a frown.
Honestly, I haven't gotten that far in my planning. I did the only thing possible, at least in my mind, but we have to try to escape in the chaos and take as many innocent people with us as possible. The monsters will begin attacking the lines of agents surrounding the town soon, if they haven't already. And that will open up weak points that we can break through. I have plenty of guns here and a working car, and...
He reached underneath his recliner, pulling out a plastic bag.
I have millions more doses of Vortex.
He shook the bag, and I saw purple crystals inside sending off sparks of iridescent lights as he did so.
This drug is active in doses of millionths of a gram and begins to work within seconds. It has 100% bioavailability even when absorbed through the skin. We may be able to figure out a way to drug the agents with it if everything else fails.
At that moment, we began to hear gunshots directly outside of the house. A bullhorn was turned on, emitting a loud mechanical shriek for a moment before a voice began to speak.
You are surrounded! A deep voice said. Come out with your hands raised and we will not harm you. You are under quarantine. I repeat, your house is surrounded. Come out now and surrender.
Oh God,
Canton said, putting his face in his hands.
It's too late.
But then he looked up, his expression brightening.
Unless?
Unless what? I asked, feeling sweaty and trapped in the house. I knew we didn't have much time before they broke down the door, and if what he said was true, they would just fill us up with bullets on the spot.
Our only chance, Canton said, is the drug. We both have to take it and open the doorway. Let something in that might be able to fight and kill those agents outside. We certainly can't take them out with my guns, just the two of us with no body armor. My rifles aren't even fully automatic, and theirs are. It really is our only hope.
I sighed deeply, a rising sense of trepidation increasing my anxiety. I didn't want to take this drug, didn't even want to be near it. I had seen the kind of horrors it could unleash.
All right,
I said, before I could let my fear stop me. Let's do this now before I lose my courage. He nodded, getting up and rummaging through his nearby desk. Pulling out two bright blue pills, he gave one to me and kept one for himself.
Same time, he said. Just chew it and keep it in your mouth. We don't have time to wait for the capsule lining to dissolve. Ready?
I nodded, and we both popped the capsules into our mouth, chewing them as fast as we could. I could hear the agents moving around outside, getting closer. It sounded like there was dozens of people out there.
Last chance, said the man with the bullhorn. Come out with...
Then his voice deepened and slowed, and I couldn't understand it anymore. It sounded like the calls of a blue whale in the ocean, but even deeper than that. Time slowed to a crawl. I looked out the window and saw a water droplet falling. It fell at a snail's pace, seeming to hang suspended in the air by some magical force. My heart tightened in my chest, and I felt overwhelming waves of fear. I remembered all the worst parts of my life, finding my brother's dead body after a heroin overdose, seeing my mother dying of cancer, having to bury my cat's mangled body after she was attacked by a neighbor's dog that had ripped her throat out. It was like it was all there in front of me every time I blinked, another image of terror and sadness, like the drug was trying to break me. I closed my eyes and breathed deep, trying to calm myself, using techniques for Buddhist meditation I had learned. I recited a mantra and began to focus on my breathing, imagining pure white light spreading from my heart to the rest of my body. While it didn't fully break the terror, it did help a great deal. When I opened them again, I saw Canton also had expressed fear on his face. His bright blue eyes looked frantically around the room as rainbows began to shimmer behind him. Two doorways materialized at the same time, both standing nearly as tall as the room itself. I stared into the kaleidoscope tunnel in the center as I heard the front door crashing in, the sound of heavy boots entering the house. We had almost ran out of time. From one of the portals stepped out a monster from some alien world. They were about the size of German shepherds and even walked on all fours, but there the resemblance to canines ended. Their skin looked like burning lava, and their eyes were just empty sockets with flames dancing within the empty orbs. Their mouths hung open, revealing hundreds of sharpened obsidian teeth the size of needles on the top and bottom. There were four of them, and they seemed to travel as a pack. They regarded us with rage, looking like they were about to spring and tear both of our throats out. Luckily at that moment, an agent ran in with his gun raised at us, his finger on the trigger, and the creatures immediately turned and pounced on him instead. He screamed as their paws burned through his SWAT gear and into his flesh, a smell like roasting pork mixed with the burning cloth of the living room. I took the chance to grab Canton's hand and try to pull him away from the direction of the front door.
We have to go now!
I whisper shouted at him. And then I saw what was coming through the other portal. It reminded me of the Hindu god Shiva. It looked like a human being with blue skin who stood 10 feet tall, had four arms and a loincloth of some alien leather material covering his waist. In his top right arm, he held a silver trident, the other arms all holding daggers or swords. His eyes looked like pure white lights emanating from the face as he stared directly at me. And I knew without question that I had been the one who summoned this being. Dozens more federal agents rushed into the room, their guns raised, but they weren't even looking at us anymore. They all began shooting in unison at the alien dogs and the four-armed being. The dogs leapt at the agents, their molten skin melting the agents' guns and bodies as they ripped out the agents' throats with their obsidian teeth. Spurts of blood began to soak the hardwood floors as men began to scream and die all around us. The smell of copper and iron began to drift through the entire area as droplets of blood flew in all directions.
Let's go,
I said to Canton, grabbing his arm and leading him towards the kitchen. There was no door in there, but I opened a large window, shoving the old man through before jumping out myself. Shrieks of pain and more gunshots followed us out into the night.
I used my cell phone as a light as we traversed across the forest. There were signs of a perimeter being formed, but the dead bodies of men and women and black SWAT gear all around us showed us that it hadn't been against the many monsters released in the town of Fredericksburg this night. Some of the agents out here on the edge of town had been beheaded, others were skinned alive. A few were crucified on lampposts, most of their clothes ripped off and deep gashes covering their entire bodies. I saw men whose penises had been cut off and stuffed into their mouths, women whose eyes had been ripped out and replaced with coins, and much worse things than that I try not to remember. Eventually, we made it into the nearby town, grabbing food from a diner, and I wrote this all down. I thought it was over. I hoped it was over. I don't want to think of this night ever again. However, someone just sent me a picture on my cell phone. It looked like a blue-skinned, four-armed god dancing on the bodies of dozens of black-clawed men in SWAT gear.